Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and we have a very interesting show for you today. Guests that are very diverse, but like always, we'll figure out the similarities during the show because we know that we have more in common than that is different. But before I go ahead and introduce our first guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. Find someone, I don't care who it is, find someone relaxing, chilling, enjoying their Thursday, and let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live so that they can grab their notebook, their recorder, and they can take notes as well. I learned so much from the show, and I know that you and your friends will as well. So while you're doing that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Dr. Jackie Taylor. Dr. Taylor is one of 100 global leaders for 2019. As a top 10 global Internet of Things innovator, she doesn't just predict the future, she engineers it using cutting edge web science research. She will clarify and demystify the future for you and spotlight the mega trends inspiring you to align your organization to profit from the Internet of Things. Good morning, Dr. Jackie. How are you?
Good morning and good afternoon from somewhere outside of London. Delighted to be here, Sharifa.
I am delighted to have you. Now, I was reading your bio and half of it sounds scientific and then the other half of it sounds like it was a prediction from a psychic. So I want to learn more. What exactly do you do?
So I'm a web scientist. I work with Tim Berners-Lee that invented the World Wide Web that allows us to do this today. I founded a company in 2009 to unlock the talents of Generation Z, Generation Z at 27 to 17 today, in order to bring forward an inclusion agenda. And by that, I mean, leave no one behind. Tech is the enabler for that. But deep tech is the world that I live in every day, but the world that perhaps many of you are not part of just yet. So it's the world beyond this Facebook world that we're in today. And it's a space where deep scientific research, in my case, the web science that I've pioneered with my company and the work I've done with Sir Tim Berners-Lee, and the engineering background. So the co-founder of the Flying Binary, I'm an aerospace engineer, and my co-founder is an electrical engineer. And the future of our world, the new societal contract that we're pulling together, technology actually is the way in which, if Tim was here, he would say, the way in which humanity unlocks its own truth. So tech enables us to not just survive, but to thrive as a human species, as humanity.
Why are you so passionate about tech, Dr. Jackie?
Well, as an aerospace engineer, my entire career was canned when I got my degree because I'd pioneered some new jet engine technology to make the noise pollution from aircraft in our cities be of use to us all. So something we could all live with. And I discovered that I was not allowed to work on that project because I was female and the client was from the Middle East and was not going to have a woman in charge. And so I was dispatched to the computing department to see what I could do there. So it wasn't actually my choice. But interestingly, I saw that tech was something that was on an evolutionary scale. And what we needed to do was to find out what best to do with it. So, you know, lots of tech people are into the shiny, the new. That's not really me. Is it any use? What will I have it do? What will I enable with it? So for me, it's been about a way of getting the tech to do heavy lift and shift so the humans can do the interesting stuff. And that's actually why I'm so passionate about it. But more than anything, my work today, my clients are Gen Alpha between the ages of 16 to 6. Although James, who's 4, would have me remind you that actually he's 4 and he's still included. And that is true. And because our younger generations look on tech in a completely different way and they utilize it to make their world what they want. So it's part of a movement that I've created called the Empathy Economy. And I got the opportunity to, I'm Irish by descent, to make the wheels make a full turn in February of 2020 because I delivered the new global plan for the G20 economies. The G20 economies is 60% of the world's GDP, in the Middle East. Now, all those years back in the beginning of my career was ended, and I was, you know, I just adapted, I moved on, and I got a chance to bring my technology career back into the world of engineering where I started, but in the Middle East where my career, my aerospace career was ended. So very much a synergies and synchronicities. And I think for me, I've been passionate about how tech can enable and unlock, but particularly I've focused very much on our younger generation, because they've got abilities, they've got capabilities and talents that you know, that the as older generations don't actually have. They're not digital natives, as people talk about it. They actually use it to make the world a better place. And tech's my superpower, and I'm there helping them. And that's really why, what gets me out of bed in the morning is, you know, three triplets who are all six, who have got their mum and dad organized and started a new business last week. That's why I do what I do.
Wow, three little triplets. Six-year-old triplets.
Yeah, they've got the house running on a, three boys running on a different schedule this week. And I said, the first thing I said to their mum, Sam, when she rang me was, tell me you didn't stop them. She goes, no, I did what I was told. And I said, oh, that's interesting. What did they tell you to do? Sit down, take notes. But apparently we're coming to the end of our lockdown in London, or in the UK. We finished that yesterday. So they came up with the new plan. Okay, post-lockdown, mum, dad, take notes. This is how it's going to work.
So how does it work? According to the
situation? Well, I mean, basically, they needed to be more effective with their time management. They needed to do more exercise, and quite frankly, they're spending too much time on their phones. Because I said to Sam, what's the top three things you needed to do? She said, well, there's a list, Jackie. You know there'll be a long list. I said, yeah, but top three. She said, those three. I've got to do those. I've got a week. I'm like, okay, Sam.
Wow, I love it. I love it. Dr. Jackie, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Our next guest is Mr. Andy Lindis. And Andy has also utilized his effective earned media push to become the local home improvement expert in the Twin Cities area. Lindis has also continued to push its popular non-paid forms of branding, which include Facebook with over 7,000 followers, YouTube with over 1 million lifetime views, Pinterest with over almost 60,000 monthly views, Twitter with over 30,000 followers. He has become the expert in his field. Good morning, Andy. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Now, it was kind of interesting that I always talk about sometimes, you know, people can make a business interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what you've been able to do through social media, make your business, which some may consider ordinary, actually extraordinary. How do you do that, Andy?
You know, what we really try to focus on is telling a story, the why behind people are choosing what they're doing in their house. And 2020, It's been really easy to tell those stories, and creating content is never an easy thing. It's one of the hardest things that I have to do. I don't like to watch my own videos. I don't like to listen to the own podcast. It just makes my skin crawl. I'm lucky enough to have a really good team around me that doesn't pull punches. So if I'm bad at it, or if it doesn't look good, they're not going to just sugarcoat it and tell me it. And so I have a good team that makes that easier, but we try to just be as honest as we possibly can and get the homeowner's perspective. So many times it's my perspective on why we choose this thing. Well, I've been in this industry my entire life. I'm a second generation hammer swinger. My mother and father started the company, and my dad always said he was the head of the company, but my mother was the neck, and she could turn the head any way she wanted.
That's beautiful. They must have been married a long time.
They still are. I think going on 40 years.
Oh, that's beautiful.
40 years this May. Yeah, 41 years this May.
Beautiful, yep. Beautiful. Now, I know that your team may say, okay, Andy, that one sucks. That was horrible. But when you take us back to when you first started, you know, and a reason I understand, I may not understand your particular industry, but my dad owns his own plumbing and HVAC company. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had it in California since 1985. So people in certain industries tend to kind of want to stay away from social media. So for you, how did you decide or make that leap to start doing videos?
You know, that's a really good question. It was by happenstance, to be honest with you. This little production company out of Madison, Wisconsin, reached out to me. And long story short, we have offices all over the Midwest, Madison, Green Bay, Des Moines, and we are just starting to get over to that side of the state. We're in Wisconsin, but I'm 35 minutes from downtown St. Paul, Minnesota, where I am. We're right on the border. And that was our main market. So this little production company reached out to us and they do a half hour long TV show. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're going to put them on YouTube for you and everything. We'll break them up into 5 minute segments. Next thing I know, I'm getting 30, 40, 50,000 views on a metal roofing video. People around the country that I've met at seminars are reaching out, asking me about these videos. And then we started putting them in email form and we did a really good job of taking those 30 minute videos and making as much content as we possibly could out of them. And this is before we even really had a Facebook page. We had a very small CRM and then our CRM right now, that runs my life. It's built on the Salesforce platform. I also have two brothers in the company. My younger brother, Alex, that's his main job. He just works on our CRM. My brother, Adam, he does all of the production, works on and that stuff, make sure that whatever we sell goes on the wall very well. And I'll get back to that. That's the key to, I think, the success of any home improvement company. First, do good work, and then you can talk about it. As long as you're doing good work, you're able to manage your reputation, and you're going to get a lot more likes on Facebook. People appreciate when you do good things on their house. So when you ask them to like your stuff on Facebook, they typically do.
Wonderful. What is your favorite video? What video surprised you? I mean, you may have just been, you know, swinging a hammer, whatever it was, and the results were crazy. Which one surprised you the most?
You know what? One of my favorite videos we posted had been 2-3 years ago. My mother scares very easy, and it's tinted windows coming into our office, and she opened it. My brother had scared her, and stuff went flying. There was another video of my brother singing, putting up Christmas lights. There was a really good video that I was on a roof, and this roof was 3 years old, and it was done improper, and it was a storm damage restoration project. And I'm up on the roof and I was explaining, it was really easy to explain. I go, this is why we put the ice and water shield up along the rake, because the weather typically comes from that area of the world. So wind driven rain can get underneath this. And I take this piece of plywood and I was able to put my hand right through it. Again, it's 3 years old. Completely rotten out. That video got us a lot of work, and that video, actually my salespeople were able to use that video to explain to people, this is why it costs a little bit more. This is why we're going to take this extra step. So it really, video content is something that we struggled with in 2020, as you guys know, with COVID. Not a lot of people, one, you're not allowed, production companies weren't allowed to do a lot of things. Two, I just didn't want to be the guy showing up at somebody's house with a sound guy, a production guy, a videographer, and all of my guys doing work. It just didn't seem like the right thing. So we've been recycling as much old content as we possibly could. And it's a lot of fun for my family, especially because I'm about 75 to 80 pounds lighter than I was when I filmed most of this stuff. So large Andy has been making a lot of appearances lately. So I'm excited to maybe get the new and improved smaller version of Andy out in the video world sooner or later.
I'm trying to see what small Andy is drinking, because I'm trying to lose 75 to 100. How do you do that?
You know, I think this is made in your state, isn't it? It's a Killcliff.
I don't know. I've never heard of it. I drink water, but I'm a gangster's paradise. I like it. Now, again, if you are just now tuning into the show, please go ahead and share the show. And if you have questions or comments, please feel free to ask them in the comment section. There's a Jill Johnson Larson who says, best company ever.
She might be a little biased. She's the head of my HR.
Well, at least you have a great rapport with HR. Not everyone does.
I'm telling you, she's a lifesaver for us, especially with COVID, with all of the steps that we've had to take and figure out. And we're up to over 400 paid days off for 2/3 pay for COVID pay already this year. And she's had to manage all that, tell people they have to go get tested and have those conversations with people. I'm telling you, she's had the hardest job at Lindis Construction this year, and it's not even close.
And she's still here rooting for you. I think that's amazing.
Yes, I probably owe her quite a few bottles of wine.
I'm going to work for you if you're paying in wine. I like that. Dr. Jackie, listening to Andy's story, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's really interesting because I'm the founder of the data journalism industry. And I thought that as a woman, when you're doing something new, it's like the worst combination. You're female and you're deciding to move the envelope. And I had a conversation with a journalist friend of mine. We were both speaking on a stage. And he said to me, I love what you do, but I don't see how, you know, as journalists, we'll even survive. And I said, well, you won't as you are, but you will need to do something different. So he said, so, okay, the next thing that you get to do, loop me in and let's create something. Let's see what that looks like. And essentially, what do journalists do? They tell stories. And as a web scientist, what I do is also tell stories, but I do it on evidence. And investigative journalists, which is the ones I'm talking about, not perhaps most of the media that you read, but they tell stories, but they actually do a lot of background checking. That background checking can be around the evidence, the data. So we combined those two things and called ourselves data journalists. And essentially the first story we stood up was when I was given some evidence around the early war in Afghanistan about how it was killing civilians. So I told that story and my journalist friend Simon told the words around that, put that up there. And it was very interesting because he said, I'm not sure telling stories in your new world will work. And I said, well, we won't know till we try. So I pressed the button. I was in their newsroom. I pressed the button. And within 2 hours, 22 million people across the world responded. And the industry was born. I've written 3 books since then about the fact that not all of us can do what we all do. You know, I couldn't do what Andy does. That's not my gig. I can't do it. But I care about what he does. And so actually, whereas in our data journalism world, there's about 8% of us across the world that can do what we do. There's 7 million of us in our network. You'll know about Paradise Papers, Panama Papers, the opiate scandal. That's the sort of work we do. But we can share that with 92% of the world, and people care, because actually stories are very compelling. And the ones that we do based on evidence have challenged governments, they've challenged organizations, they've challenged policy. And that's, you know, I suppose the most famous one was when Obama was running for his second term, and we put up a series of stories, and the Obama team are like, are you gonna run another one? Yeah, we've got a whole week's worth. And basically we've got 2 weeks worth actually. And if he doesn't run, if he doesn't win, maybe we'll run the second week. And it's very interesting because I was speaking in New York at the beginning of his second term, and I met the team that was dealing with it on the other side of the phone. And they said those stories were so compelling. They had us running around just like mad people, because how compelling was that and how interesting. But interestingly, the story was not just about America. It was about the African nations, and Obama had done some comparisons, unfair comparisons against the African nations. It's like, oh, hang on a minute, the facts don't support that. And so very interesting that stories as humans are very compelling. But my background is I'm a Sinishe. I'm Celtic by origin. Originally, my family's from Ireland. And the Sinishes are actually the storytellers of Ireland, because Ireland's history isn't written. It's actually told in stories. And really what I'm talking about is what we as humans connect with. We connect with stories. But equally, what I would say to you, Andy, is I've done probably 6 or 7 renovations with teams of people that do that, because I'm a mixed media textile artist, and I've tried that. I do that on whole buildings. And getting people that do what you do, that know what to do. You know, they can climb on a roof, they can do whatever, but do they know what they're doing? That's still quite hard. So I think the idea you have confidence in somebody and they tell you the story is why you should. Quite frankly, I still think construction is one of the hardest things if you're a customer trying to get a good job done, I would say.
I would say
telling stories is it.
And there's a reason why my industry is the number one complained on industry with the Better Business Bureau. We just are. There's more complaints. One, the licensing is rather easy to get. Doesn't take a lot to get into this business. But that's also the beauty of this business. I know some very successful people that went to stores, got samples, and started their business on Craigslist, and now they're, you know, multi-million dollar type businesses. So there's that story can still happen in America. And yeah, it's a hard job, but it's not any harder than learning what you do, Jackie. And I like when you were earlier, you're talking about Generation Z and the millennials, that in our industry and in the roundtables that I've taken place in the last 5 to 10 years, they've always been talked about in like a negative tone. Like, you know, we have to deal with these millennials. We're going to have to deal with these millennials. And me, one, I've been around high school kids a long time. I loved coaching high school athletics, recently retired from that. I have a 22-year-old son, a 19-year-old son, 16-year-old daughter. So this generation is important to me. I spend a lot of time around them. And what I've come to find out, it's not just about the money that they earn. It's not just about the benefits or anything like that. It's about being part of a team. They react differently to criticism. Some of them do anyway, but some of them don't. You know, I had plenty of high school players that I could get on and tell them how terrible they were, and that's going to make them better. And then some that you would have to prod along and talk about it. And the other ones wouldn't do anything you said until you explained to them the why they were doing that, until they understood the why behind it. They don't know. So we refocused and went hard after the high schools, and some of the tech colleges were getting rid of the carpentry programs even because nobody was signing up for them. But I went around and started to explain to people, I have people wearing tool belts that will make $100,000 this year. There is an ability, if you can really focus and become a craftsman. And we have a 5-tiered program that anybody can sign up for, get into, and more than that. And if you have an entrepreneurial bone in your body, there's been 30, 40 businesses spawned off of Lindis Construction in the Twin Cities metro area over the last 20 years. Come here, learn from us, go start your own thing, do good work. There's plenty of work. Right? I know everybody that's good at what they do has a backlog right now. There's room for us all. And one thing.
Okay,
that's
where are you?
Go ahead.
Where are you, Andy?
I'm in the Minneapolis-St. Paul market is my main market area. I'm in the little town I live in is Woodville, Wisconsin, which is about 35, 40 minutes from downtown St. Paul.
Okay. Dr. Jackie?
So where am I? You mean, always to follow on what I was going to say to Andy, were you asking me where I am?
No, I was asking Andy where he was because he said he had a backlog of work, but I interrupted you. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to share your thought.
Yeah, I took a lot of flack in 2009 when I formed Flying Binary to do this work around the idea I wasn't going to work with the millennials. And I was looking at the world as it was in 2009 with Sir Tim, where only 18% of the world was online. And my mission was to move that to 80%. We're over 50% of the world online now. And I won an award last Saturday, top 20 UK entrepreneur. My impact, I've positively impacted half of the world's population, but that's still not enough. My plan is the 80%. I'm a UN advisor, and that's how I deliver that final mile, if you like. But we specifically went to support the talents of Gen Z. And two things when I stood up at the G20. Number one, your future's not competitive, it's collaborative. And you'll be a dinosaur that roars if you don't understand that. And then secondly, today, I stood up in February 2020, Generation Z accounts for 40% of the influence across the economic power across the world. So if they're not part of your market and what you're doing, and if you don't understand what they need and what most of the time what they're capable of using technology, that's where you're limiting your market. You're leaving out a whole cohort. But I took a lot of flack about the fact that I didn't focus on the talents for the millennials. But Generation Y, who were the after the boomers, they essentially were the generation that dipped their toe online. And the thing about the Internet of Things is it's a fabric across the entire world that connects us all, and we all use technology in our day. That's what that sort of future looks like. But Generation Y, as they that were sort of in force when I was starting the research that I did that backs this up, they really dipped their toe but really didn't get that involved in it. And then millennials were negotiating it, but Generation Z have never done that. They've actually said, what's it useful for? And Gen Alpha, look at it in a completely different way. I've got young people as young as 4 coding in Python to challenge the gaming industry, because miss, they do it wrong. Okay, that's fine. Show me what good looks like. And I think that for me, I've said it's all about that skills and talent. And I just stand up next week to reformat the entire European agenda. And one of the things that founded that particular piece of work out of the G20 was, we know across the whole of Europe, 49% of our jobs are no longer going to be here in the world that I'm building for. So 49% of people need to be somewhere else doing something else. And how does that work? Only 19% of us have jobs that will continue into the next 10 years. And so actually a lot of what I do is Gen Z are the ones that are envisaging that new world, that new world of work. They are our web entrepreneurs. If they can't find it or they don't like it, they go make it. And they might not make it themselves, but they find a way to make it. Gen Alpha are just literally experimenting everywhere, but not really using anything that's gone before. They're looking at the world in a different way. So for me, it's actually about how do we as entrepreneurs build that world? And the way I've put forward on the G20 work I've been doing is I understand the global plan now, because it's my plan. I understand how it's going to execute and what's going to happen. What I care about is how entrepreneurs are going to use that. And so I'm about to launch something called the Empathy Economy Online. So of course, I'm going to make it available. I've made a personal commitment for it to be available to 1 million entrepreneurs, because I know with 1 million entrepreneurs, we'll cover the earth with it. I've got the data. So we could argue about it later.
Let's discuss that, Dr. Jackie. I'm interested, okay, especially in moving forward. And entrepreneurship is my passion. One of the things that I've heard a lot as far as data, as far as what you had to say, but from what I've seen and from what the guests have told me on the show, where we are right now is I'm 44, right? My generation, we still believed at some point that if you got a job, you would be there for 25 years or 30 years, you would get that gold watch, you would get that gold pin, you would retire, and health benefits was an automatic. When I was first getting jobs, there was never ever a question on whether or not I would get health benefits. It just was, it just is. Now it's not. There are very few companies that even offer health benefits, or you know, I was laid off 8 times. There's no longevity there. So now when you talk about the younger generation, what I've seen is my children are 23 and 26, right? So when they look for employment or a career, they're looking for something that means something, something that matters, something that has a social impact, something, you know, because they can't just do anything with the salary. They have no health benefits. So there needs to be something more that holds them to a company. Now, I am going to allow you to respond to that, Dr. Jackie, but I did want to read a comment from the audience. And I also wanted to allow Andy to respond because he was waving his hand over there. He had his thought. I see you, Andy. I got you.
I was more curious on what 40% of jobs you think are going to go away, Jackie.
Well, I don't know. Do you want to do the audience question? I'm happy to do
that. No, Andy asked the question. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's okay. So in your industry, for example, that's the piece that I started with the G20. Essentially, what you do in your industry is you look after the fabric of our nations. And I know you're very focused on perhaps more the domestic side. But so in the background of my picture, this is London. Hello to London. Over this shoulder is Tower Bridge, one of the ancient monuments of London. And over this shoulder, just the big spike, is called the Shard. That's one of the most modern buildings in London, tallest building in Europe. And actually what this is about for what I'm talking about in terms of new jobs is we automatically raise and lower the bridge in order to facilitate the traffic on the river. The traffic on the River Thames, which is the river that Tower Bridge straddles, is actually one of the busiest motorways in London, because it's literally filled with traffic all the time. And so that bridge is raised and lowered. The Shard, by comparison, pretty much is without people to staff it. There are concierge, maybe some hospitality, but largely it runs itself. So we have offices there. We have no people there. Our concierge and our reception is a robot that handles all the communications and all of the change. And actually all the people in there literally do what they do best. So none of the boring stuff do they do. And literally it's all run by machines. That's my world. And if I go to speak at an event, I take a robot with me to meet everybody, text messages for me, takes people's phone numbers for me, so that I don't have to do all of that. We say hi, we get off stage. I need to leave you a question. Can you get me that resource? Yeah, just give whichever, Pepper or whoever, give Pepper a message. He'll remember, and then he'll give me a list of things to do when I get back to the office tomorrow. That's pretty much my world. And so you take the Shard. The Shard is the world I live in, where those robots look after me and my team. But the equivalent actually happens, not actually in the Tower Bridge, but there's a part of London that is the most connected part of London. And all the buildings are ancient buildings like the Tower. And those buildings, they are able to talk with systems, they're able to self-control, self-manage, and essentially say, hey, we need such a thing doing. Hey, call Andy, he needs to come. That no human involved in the loop, because actually they're building self-sufficient and self-managing. So your world will be one of the, not the 49% that goes away, where we, you know, perhaps hospitality and things like that is not there, but yours is the world that actually takes something from some sort of computer of some kind that literally loads whatever computer you're carrying and gives you a list of things you're doing today, pretty much like my robot Pepper does for me, because actually manages all the boring stuff. And then of course I can reallocate some of those things that I don't want to do to somebody else who's better at it than me. And so actually they're surrounding us. And so even the fabric, and I've started that across the world with the fabric of the world. So the construction industry, the infrastructure industry, particularly the critical national infrastructure, things like our power grids and things like that, that's where that's starting. And so those are the new jobs of the world. One of the big job increases in the UK is wind. We're likely to be the foremost producer of wind power in the world. And we'll be exporting that across the world in order to say, to help other people, mean that we tackle climate change. But those are all brand new engineering jobs that never existed 5-6 years ago, but they're all enabled by technology.
Andy, did that answer your question?
It did. And this is a big struggle with us in my industry. And I try this all the time, virtual estimates, virtual because we have the technology where we can take, you know, pictures around your house and create a whole 3D model that gives me every measurement known to man, that can change the colors and windows, and I can put pink flamingos in your yard if that's what you want. But it's not the same as like my inspections that I use. Like I'm using moisture meters. I'm getting in the attics. I'm putting cameras in the walls to really like it makes sure that all of the costs that could happen on the project are talked about up front. So my experience with this stuff so far is the technology isn't quite there. And we spend a lot of money and a lot of time doing it. We have the drones and the, I mean, I don't have Pepper the robot following me around yet, but that sounds like a good idea.
I need me a Pepper. How do I get a Pepper?
Actually, my number one robot fan is a toaster. There's a toaster that absolutely adores me, and they're often Pepper and the toaster get into a fight about it. It's quite bizarre, but that's that world. And I think you're right about that, Andy. Most of the technologies I'm talking about, because I work in the military secret domain primarily, that's why I work with 180 governments, and that is there. But it obviously needs to stay in the hands that we would consider safe, let's say. But my company contracts with people like your company to deploy this stuff. In fact, one of the on-site ones, I'm thinking they're about to move, but they are in California. One of the on-site ones that we use in the US actually in California. So it would be, well, some of it's Minnesota, but anyway, round California, Minnesota, I'm not sure Wisconsin, but that's the, and we do a lot of that in things like military installations, power grids, what have you. And all I'm saying is that ends up being what we call commodity. So then you can just, send through a note to Fine Binary and we'll just connect you onto our service. And that'll be the way it'll move out. So suddenly that thing's just going to appear as if it's like magic, but it's already running and working in the world today.
I want to go back to what Andy said. What do you see as the downside of this technology? Does it require you to do too many manual elements that should have been automated? Do you still have to go behind it? What is the downside for you?
So I think there's two. Oh, sorry. You sent to Andy, were you? Sorry.
No, it's okay. Andy.
For the downside for us is the homeowner doesn't get to touch and feel the materials unless we mail them something out ahead of time. As much as we do the virtual colors on the house, it's not the same. There's always going to be a little bit of tone off. And there's things that we find when we're inspecting the house that satellite imaging, airplane imaging, Google imaging, anything like that just does not show us. So for us, I haven't found a way to get, and 2020 really made us think about this, made us really, and everyone's having virtual estimates. Next thing I'm hearing, people are calling me up like, this contractor said it was going to be $5,000 and now he showed up and it's going to be $10,000. I'm like, did he do a virtual estimate? Yeah. Well, we'll figure.
Because there were things that weren't accounted for, that couldn't be accounted for in the virtual estimate. Is that what you're saying? So that there was because I know you were giving an example, but to me, a $5,000 difference is like a large difference. I can understand, being off a little bit.
Yeah. Well, think about this. You do it all from, so in our industry for roofing, there's a couple of companies. Eagle View is one of them. You pay $25 and you get an immediate report of that roof. It gives you the takeoff, the square. You don't even have to measure it, anything. So say you didn't get up on that roof and walk it. You didn't get in the attic and look at it. Turns out they have mold issues. They have rotten wood. They have trusses that might have to be replaced. Their insulation all might have to be replaced. All that project might even cost more than the roof. You might be talking about $5,000. You might be taking a $10,000 project and putting it into a $30,000 project. And so when we inspect everything and we try to use as much technology as we possibly can during our inspection process. So we got the borescopes, we got the little cameras we can dip into the walls. We got that, it's a meter we plug into the wood that gives us the moisture content for that species of wood. So we can exactly see what's going on there. We use infrared imaging an awful lot. And then when it comes to the envelope of the house, we have blower doors that will actually hook up to the actual house. And it's going to change the pressure of the house. So then we can see where all the air leaks are happening. So we can really start to seal it up. And, not only we give people a chance to save money, help the environment, but we're really after trying to make their house the most comfortable as it possibly can be. And I would love for your technology to catch up with us someday, Jackie. And why is it the military gets all the fun stuff first? Why,
we have to protect the world. We have to protect everyone. Now, I didn't get a chance earlier, but I did want to go ahead and read a comment from Dominique Wiles. I'm pretty sure you recognize that name, Andy. But Dominique Wiles says, it is not just a company. We're a family. Thank you to the Lindis family for letting me be a part of it.
Oh. Yeah. Dom's good people. Aww. Now, he's worn a couple of different hats in our company. But yeah, no, that's... That's the extent of it. We have not only do I work with a lot of family, we have a lot of second generation people that are working for us as well. So we have people that are retiring that have been with us for 30, 35 years, and their children are now working for us and or with us. It's we're pretty lucky, to be honest with you. It's a good team.
Oh, that's wonderful. I wanted to read that, but I wanted to allow Dr. Jackie an opportunity to answer Andy's unasked question on how do we get this technology to catch up so his life is a lot better?
Well, I think the thing is we've got to negotiate that. I think we've got to negotiate that. It's not something that I would lift and shift from the military secret into a domestic setting. I wouldn't do that because it's actually built for different purpose. And so one of the things that I do is about inclusion. And by that, I mean, leave no one behind. And that means include everybody. So I work with a lot of young people who have learning differences and their perspectives on the world are different. Myself, I have visual differences. My vision is wired a different way. So I see the world in a different way. And so it's actually about how do we need to utilize that? And so one of the ways we do it, it was very interesting for the G20 because I had to effectively undermine the plan by explaining why it mattered. So I reached out, we can reach out to every person on the planet that's connected. And I reached out and just said, hey gang, got some what we call wicked questions in our world that we need answering. And 2 million young people between the ages of 36 and 16 came back to us. And they said, their view of this whole thing was, we are training where we can for this world you're talking about. We want to navigate it our own way. So one of the things they hated was autonomous vehicles. Why would I care? Why would you automate a car? In the UK, only 19% of young people have a driving license. Don't drive. No intention of doing it. But they will have access to a tube train, to an electric scooter. They walk a lot. And so they want what's called multimodal transport. So don't give me autonomous vehicles with nobody in them. I don't care about that. I actually am trying to get from A to B in a way that keeps me fit, allows me to go with my friends. And they've got, like you said before, they've got values. I think Andrew, you mentioned it as well. They've got different values around all of this. And so this is all about how do we negotiate that? So one of the things that I advise governments on is artificial intelligence. That's obviously one of the deep techs that we deliver as well. And that's about how do we trust technology to do the job we ask it to do? Now, in the military secret domain, that's a different job we ask it to do, bringing it forward to a domestic setting. So we do that for many of the organizations that run our infrastructure in the countries. You know, like I say, things like water treatment and power grids and stuff like that. But it's also, we run it for what I call estate management. So there are some very big companies that own whole portions of London, and they do what I'm talking about to their entire estate. They've got multiple buildings that they have to maintain the fabric and look after. Some of them are heritage buildings like the Tower of London behind me. So actually, it is already scaling down. When we started this work in 2009, it was only in the military. But now, you know, we've got our fabric in London, for example, being changed. It's happening in Paris. It's happening in Bonn in Germany. So it is actually making its way through. And then, of course, Generation Z have got one of these things, and they can connect to it when they like, voice assistants and all the rest of it. And so that fabric is being connected. And so essentially it's about how we decide to navigate that. What do we want it to do? And how will we make it work for us?
Well, what I want it to do, what I want is I want the Jetsons house. That's what I want. Like, if you just want to take a picture of what I want, that's what I want. I want the Peppers all around, running around, making sure I don't have to do anything myself. So are we 2 years away, 20 years away, 200 years away? When are we going to get that?
Well, that's my life today. I have that today. So it's Thursday today. I happen to be in my studio today. But if I was actually in the office today, then the robot, he's not called Pepper, would say, oh, it's Thursday, dry cleaning, is that to be delivered? Do you want it picking up? And then the lunch that was coming from here is coming from here, and such a body, and here's your fourth one. And they're just running around doing those things for me, because I don't need to do those. But what I do need to do is make the decision about what all those things need to happen. No dry cleaning today, no cancel that lunch. I'm actually going to take a walk. I'll pick something while I'm out. And they'll just run around. But that's my life today. So I mean, okay.
So how can it be my life today is my question. How can it be
Well, you know me. You know me. So that's a start. Yes. And then we go from there.
Because I need some help around here, I tell you, even with the reminding me of what I need to do. My dad always gives me a hard time because he's like, Sharifa, you have everything delivered. Everything in my house is delivered because I don't have the time to do it myself. But now if I had a little reminder that I was like, Sharifa, you have to send your laundry out or whatever it is, that's what I need. And I think that would be very helpful.
And that's the way we all tend to want to do it. But you see, for example, I have, so it's probably about 10 miles, 15 miles from where I'm sitting now. I have a data hub. It's actually got, it collects 2 million data points every day. And you'd call it a house. But actually at Christmas, it'll get reconfigured because we've got, one of my favorite aunts, who's not been very well this year, who's coming to stay. So we just basically code it in and say, aunt is coming to stay. And immediately the house has a setting for her. So her bedroom's warmer than our bedrooms. And actually the living rooms, it goes up a couple of degrees. And literally everything is in there. It knows how much energy it's consuming. In fact, we generate additional energy and send it out to the UK grid. And that's the way all of our houses will be. Now, a lot of that is about taking where you live now and retrofitting it to that. That happens to be a new build just because I've always wanted to have a new build. That's just one of my goals, I think. It's just like, that's how I want to live. But then I actually quite like open plan living. Not everybody does, not everybody has a house that works like that. But that's actually, that technology is all there. I don't think that we think about technology, about what it can do. And back to what I said at the beginning, what do you want it to do? Because pretty much everything that everybody says to me, I want it to do that. It's like, it can do that today.
Okay, but how do we get it today is the question. I know you, our listeners know you, they heard you, Andy knows you, but how does everyone, I mean, because for most people, if they want something, it's like, let me go to Amazon, let me go to the store. I would have absolutely no idea how to get a house, you just mentioned, today.
Right. So, for example, over here, we're not going to Amazon. That's not our answer. So we're actually creating a network of businesses. So, for example, lots of the books, entrepreneurs in the UK don't order their books from Amazon. We've got 45 independent bookshops that supply those. And we're not ordering books from Amazon anymore. That's a millennial thing. Gen Z, that's not how it works. Everybody needs to be enabled. We have to have inclusion. It's not about one anything, owning anything. It's that collaborative fabric. So there are ways and means of doing it, but pretty much you've got to be curious. What's the thing that Jen Arthur will teach you? I mean, I raised a, he's 27 now, but my great nephew and great niece, they're 7 and 4. And you know any of Gen Alpha and you see how they go about the world, they're curious about it. And so, for example, my great nephew says, I want to be a YouTube star, Auntie Jackie. And it's like, okay, have you got a channel? Yeah. Have you got this? Have you got that? Have you got that? Yeah. Okay, go, Riley. Because that's actually what it's about. It's about assembling that life. And so I teach something called a belief workshop, and we literally assemble that picture, and then we go out and source it. That's how my entrepreneurs that I mentor go get it, because we literally run a workshop. I orchestrate a workshop, and at the end of it, we've got a list. I'm looking at mine I'm looking at all the belief board now that I did for 2020, and then we do it, and then we literally just tick them off.
Okay, so where can I order my house?
You can order, contact me after here, we'll sort it out. Why not?
Okay, I'm gonna contact you, and I'm gonna order your house. What are you ordering, Andy? What do you want in your house?
I thought we were supposed to have flying cars by now, speaking of the Jetsons. Exactly. I mean, that's when we were kids, it was all supposed to be flying cars and robots. We're all supposed to have that now.
But hoverboards. We do have hoverboards. They're here now.
They are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, but again, you see, cars are not the thing. That was a Gen X thing, a baby boomer thing. Nobody wants a car now. So that was the bit that was wrong. That was the thing I was saying before. They want electric scooter that they don't own. They don't want to own this stuff. They want to it to be available. They want to be able to rent it and go. That sharing economy is where Gen Z and Gen Alpha are. Let's actually, the one way we include people is make it something that's not assets that we own. That whole shareholder and ownership thing is part of yesterday's world. This is about actually a community.
Well, Andy's community, he wants flying cars.
Well, yeah, you'd be on your own then, I'm sorry to say. Most of us are not having cars. In fact, you won't find Gen Z or some of the millennials to build you a car. Although you might have, you know, Tesla's the new car then. If you're going to have a car, it's going to be one of them. Because actually, it's not going to clog up the planet and we're going to worry about climate change and all of that stuff. So I think that we're on a reset. We essentially, 2018 was a reset for the world. And that's essentially where I got my big break to go speak at Davos, to drop that big rock in the pond, to get to where we are today, where entrepreneurs will negotiate that future. And that's essentially what it is.
Absolutely. Now, Dr. Jackie, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And I'll give you the floor.
Okay, thank you, Sharifa. First of all, I want to say thank you. This has been a fascinating conversation. I love the format, as I said to you earlier, but it's been brilliant. So thank you for the opportunity is the first thing. There is a new global plan, and you don't actually have to be an entrepreneur, but you can be something called an intrapreneur. Sounds to me like Andy's got a few of those in his company as well, where we've got that entrepreneurial spark. And that's actually about a world that's pretty much negotiable for us now. But the reality of it is, all of that has got a big problem that I haven't yet talked about. Of our entrepreneurs and our small businesses across the world, across 141 countries, 12% of our revenue is actually going missing. That's the revenue that the terrorists, the people traffickers, the drugs traffickers are using for their businesses. And so one of the things that I'm setting up is something called Cyber Safe Entrepreneurs, which is the foundation of this empathy economy online that I mentioned. Because at the end of the day, there's no entrepreneur that I've ever met that wants that 12% of their revenue to go to perpetrate those evils. And so I'm actually helping entrepreneurs. Contact me. I'll help you get that 12% back. But the key thing is, what I'll tell you, in that shift to the empathy economy online, you work with clients that delight you. And actually, a lot of us are struggling in a world where the value we want to deliver is with clients that don't believe in those same values. And so actually, the transition to a collaborative environment, the empathy economy, from that competitive shareholder value world, that will get you a place, not only to get that 12% of revenue back, but to get you to work with clients that delight you. That's basically, I'm not saying it's a positive future, but I am telling you it's an optimistic future. And so wherever it sits today, however bleak it might be, it only appears like that because of your perspective. I'd be delighted to help you change that perspective so that optimism is the fuel for your future.
Absolutely. And I, for one, see a positive future. All I see is positivity. Now, Andy, at the end of every show, I allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives, and just let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today, Andy. Is Andy with me?
Nope.
I see Andy, but I'm not sure if Andy can hear me. So I'm going to say a few final words for Andy, since we've apparently lost him. But visit Lindis. We have their Facebook. We have their Twitter. Visit their website. If you need something else to do, maybe you want to get into contracting, you want to learn, that's one of the things that Andy mentioned. You can visit their company. They can help you. They have generations of family members, as well as their children working for them. So check out Lindis. Also, if you are interested in being on the Roundtable Talk Show, we're trying to figure this out right now. If you're Andy, are you with me?
Yeah, I don't know why I keep losing internet. I know they're working on fiber optics in my
Okay, I have you right now. I lost them right now. It's okay. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to this episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And if you want to be a guest, or if you want more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference on December 29th and 30th, please visit my website at asharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.